Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Hi, and thanks for joining us for this week's Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons. Gabe is off this week. I'm Paul Perreault from Faith Radio. Now, there's a lot to be frustrated with in our world. There's injustice, suffering, division, a lack of respect for life. The list could go on. To add to this, you see a lot of protest movements, campaigns, and yes, legislation to set to address matters in a top-down manner, yet most of these fail to make a dent in the issue that they're meant to address. Sorry to paint such a bleak picture, but maybe the way to address such matters is a bit more organic and from the bottom up. If you were with us last week, you heard us talk about a new campaign by Q Ideas called Up to Us. It's a call to personal action. We'll talk more about that later in the show. First, though, we wanted you to hear from Justin Dillon. Now, Justin is the founder of Slavery Footprint. It's an organization dedicated to ending forced labor. As you listen, you'll hear Justin describe how his personal passion and his personal giftedness were brought together for this unique grassroots project. Also, as you listen, we hope that you examine your own passions and giftedness, and then think about how you can combine them in the power of the gospel to make a difference and draw people to Christ. Let's listen to this message that came from this past spring's Q Conference.
Despite what we've been taught to believe, we were made for chaos, and God has been embracing and going after chaos and has invited everyone who's ever walked this planet to do the same. The promise that God gives us in the chaos of others is like a toy surprise that you have to work for. Everybody here wants this toy surprise. In fact, we've all been talking about this toy surprise. We listen to Moody podcasts so that we can get this toy surprise, the toy surprise of purpose for our lives. And God has created this eternal, infinite axiom that we find who we are, we find our purpose in the problems of others. For the last 10 years, I've been embracing the chaos of over 40 million people who work without pay, under threat of violence, are economically exploited and unable to walk away, living in modern-day slavery. Specifically, the people that work to make our lives awesome. It's the young girls who are mining in a mica mine, the mineral that becomes sparkles that we get to put on our faces and our cars. It's the Cambodian man who goes down to get a job and is thrown onto a boat so we can have shrimp salad. These are the people's chaos that I've embraced and put into my life. And what's crazy about chaos is that it's not a single serve. The reality is, chaos is something that we can all embrace. And I've had the opportunity for the last few years to create films and creating the website. I meet with churches and companies and institutions, all of which I get to share the participation. We've built websites and now a business software that companies can look for slavery in their supply chains. And I've been going around for years sharing this, and every time I go somewhere, someone comes up to me. I know the look because their eyes are glazed. I know what they're going to ask me. How can I help? I want to help. Now, what they're not asking me is, where can I donate? What's your social media handle? Can I give you my email address? They're asking the infinite question. What is my purpose? How can I take what's inside of me and apply it to the chaos of others? What I have to tell these people is, I actually don't know. Because the script over your life that was written before time, in indelible, infinite ink, onto the finite pages of your life, is your script. No one else can tell you what your purpose is. No church, no school, no company can tell you what your purpose is. It is yours to find when you go out and smell the chaos of other people's problems. Now, chaos doesn't have to be slavery. It can be the PTSD of veterans. It can be the spider web of the foster care system. It can be the people living next door or working four jobs just to afford to live in your neighborhood who don't have time to do the homework for their kids. Chaos comes in many forms, but it is required for our lives to be able to find purpose. The purpose and your desire for purpose is an entire industry, and everybody wants to get at your purpose, and everybody wants to tell you what your purpose is, and yet no one can. And there are several counterfeits to try to tell you what your purpose is, and I'm going to tell you about two of them today. The first counterfeit is acquisition. If I acquire enough things, then I'll find what I think is my purpose. If I get enough followers on social media, if I find the right mate, if I get enough commas in my bank account, I'll have purpose. No, you won't. You'll have happiness. Happiness is awesome, but it's single serve. See, happiness is taking things from the outside and bringing it in. But when you say, how can I help? What is my purpose? Where's that ink that's written over my life? You're saying, what can come out of me and go out into the world? Happiness will never get you there. In fact, a solitary path of happiness is scientifically proven to lead you to narcissism. The second counterfeit that is preying upon our purpose is association. We live in a world now where we can build a social profile and never leave our lives. We can pull equity from causes and ideas and push those around ourselves and pull this association in. We can get a return without ever making an investment. And there's a phenomenon for this, and you're going to be hearing about it more and more. If there's anything you're going to remember from what I say today, remember these words. Virtue signaling. Virtue signaling is a phenomenon that's happening in our culture today where we get to push out to morality or a cause and try to bring that back. In fact, someone just tried to do that, a large beverage company, virtue signaled to all of us to draw on our purpose by creating a model who's, she just sees a riot, people fighting for the chaos of others outside. You've seen this commercial, and she runs into the riot and the chaos of others and the cause of others, and she ends it, God bless her, with a bubbly soda, carbonated drink, hands the soda to the riot police. And that's when the riot started online. Because for the first time in many months, the internet got what it wanted. It agreed on something. It agreed that you can't virtue signal the purpose in our lives because it's sacred and infinite and it ties to our soul. We can't just associate our ways into purpose. It requires us to step into the chaos of others. I'm not the only one who believes this. Dr. King, when he spoke to Oberlin College, told everyone in the audience, I am not who I am supposed to be until you are who you're supposed to be. And you're not who you're supposed to be until the person next to you is who they're supposed to be. We find ourselves when we give ourselves away. Our identity is bound. What he went on to say in his letters from the Birmingham jail, we are bound in an inescapable network of mutuality. What happens to one directly happens to another indirectly. We're connected. Chaos isn't something that we should run away from. We can follow the infinite script given to us by our Creator to push into chaos and to change the world from here. And I'm so excited that all of you will have the chance to do that. And I can't wait to see what happens tomorrow when you wake up and smell the chaos. Thank you.
If you were to talk to Justin, you'll also hear how his organization, Slavery Footprint, was started because he felt God had gifted him in a unique way to address the issues of modern slavery. He felt that, with that giftedness, it was up to him to do what he could to make a difference. What about you? How are you gifted? What are the passions God has laid on your heart? Last week, Gabe told us about a new campaign here at Q called Up to Us. Here's Gabe again to remind us of it.
We're using the hashtag Up to Us, and the idea is that this is up to us. It's not up to anybody else. It's not up to government leaders. It's not up to just academic and institutional leaders. It's not just up to the church or religious leaders. It's actually up to us. And so as part of this campaign, what we're asking you to do is three things. The first is we want you to speak up. We want you to tell others that you're a part of this. We want you to let them know, share, post that you're pledging to lead in a different way, that you want to be part of the solution. The second thing we're asking you to do is meet up. Meet up with somebody who's different than you. In person, eye to eye, talk to somebody, learn from them who have a different perspective from you. They disagree with you, maybe politically, maybe they're of a different race, maybe they have a bias that you don't share. And by getting time together, you're just going to listen and learn and demonstrate and model how to lead better conversations in a divided world. The third thing we're asking you to do is to listen up. when you gather people in your homes around the table, maybe a small group conversation or this Thanksgiving or over the holidays, when you get together, listen to people's stories and perspective. Let's ask better questions. And we believe if we do that, we will actually be part of the healing. We won't be blaming somebody else for the problems we see in our society. We'll actually be taking responsibility by saying, it's up to us.
If you'd like to find more about Up to Us, go to uptousnow.com. As you heard, as part of Up to Us, Gabe is calling on us to meet up with people who are different from us, people who have different viewpoints, maybe ones we disagree with. In spite of that, we meet up with them and listen up. Engage in dialogue with them to learn and maybe find ways to creatively engage on issues together for the flourishing of our communities. At this past spring's Q Conference, Gabe did just that. He talked with Micah White. Now, Micah was one of the founders of Occupy Wall Street. Micah recently wrote a book called The End of Protest, where he's reassessing the effectiveness of the protest movement. For many of us, we wouldn't think of dialoguing with Micah, but Gabe did. Here's a portion of that discussion.
As you've studied history, and I know this is something you love, is just looking at historical movements, trying to understand how you create change. I mean, what are the ways change happens in your estimation now, if it's not taking to the streets?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the core messages that I'm trying to get across is I'm not saying don't protest. I think what I'm trying to say is we need to reconceive what protest is. Protest, if you look at it historically, what it is it's really a behavior that's culturally defined. People have protested differently throughout human history. I mean, during the American Revolution, you know, they tarred and feathered people or pulled down their houses, or during the Civil Rights era, we marched. And I think now we've reached a point where the current repertoire of our tactics, they're broken. And the reason why they're broken, if you kind of look at why they're broken, is because the story underlying why we protest is false. And that basic story has something to do with that it's kind of a mystical, magical thinking. It has something to do with if you can get large numbers of people in the streets, they manifest some sort of greater power over their democracy, which makes perfect sense in a certain way, because if you can get so many people into the streets saying something, of course their leaders should have to listen to them. But it's not true. It's really not true. So we have to think about, well, how do the people manifest a greater power over their governments? And that gets into these questions of sovereignty. It gets into these other issues. And I think that that's really the direction we need to go, is that we can no longer rely on the fact that we are able to get millions of people into the streets. We act as activists as if that's extremely difficult, but recent years have shown us, since Occupy Wall Street, it's actually very easy for us now. We can get women to march, scientists to march. We can get Black Lives Matter to march. We have to kind of go differently, a little bit deeper. I think the path forward is very hard, but I think that it's going to be fundamentally more rewarding.
Well, I can see from your writings, you're really doubling down on a new path. I mean, you're trying to inspire those who are reading your work and who are inspired by your boldness and your movement. You're saying, look, we've got to get our sleeves rolled up. We've got to get more involved. We've got to go deeper into our communities and our cities. Talk a little bit about what you're trying to inspire those who follow you and your movement to do.
Well, again, I mean, I think that, you know, if you want to manifest a power greater than your government, then you really have two options. And I think this is where we're at as activists right now. We can either embrace some sort of violent war tactic. Basically, we can win wars. Or we can win elections. And as soon as I start talking about this, like winning elections, people's minds shut off because they think that they already know that means Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump. And I think that no, what we need to reconceive is we need to conceive of how social movements can win elections. That's really where I'm trying to go here. Because I think the war route we all understand is obviously not the desirable path. We see that that is going to lead even darker. But the winning elections route, we see that possibly social movements, this ability, and by social movements I basically mean this ability for ideas to go into the population and convince large numbers of people to do behaviors that they would never have done before.
Yeah.
If we can kind of merge that with winning elections, I think that what we're going to have is a kind of a major breakthrough. But again, how would that work? What would it look like? You know, it's very
interesting. Well, you've encouraged people I've seen to move to small towns, to get on city councils, to get on school boards. I mean, it almost sounds kind of old school political movement saying, hey, you might have to sacrifice, you might have to change your landscape or your environment, but this is what it's going to take if we're serious about making change the way that we envision seeing change.
Yeah. Yeah, no, after Occupy, I moved to rural Oregon, where I live now in a tiny town of 200 voters. And I think that the one message I want to get across, though, that is You know, right now there's a kind of idea that what we're missing is good people in office. And I like that idea. It's appealing. And so they say, what we need to do is elect good people into office, and they'll make good decisions, and the world will be a better place. I think actually that that's not exactly what we need to do. I think instead what we need to do is change how decisions are made. Mm. And what that means isn't just electing good people into office. It means somehow getting lots of, like, a movement into office. Mm. How does a movement not just say, okay, that guy's going to represent me, and then I go home. Instead say, okay, after the election, we maintain control over the government. And I think that that's what we're trying to figure out.
Yeah, you talk a lot about sovereignty. I mean, this subject has been a subject of a lot of your talks and thinking. Talk to us about what sovereignty means to you and what it means to the way you're thinking about the future.
Yeah. Well, sovereignty, I mean, what's beautiful about sovereignty is you start to dig into it, actually you realize it's this poorly defined concept and no one really knows what it is, because it goes back to what I was saying in the beginning. We're born into a world that we do not control, that whose laws we may disagree with. But in the end of the day, there's a force out there that has sovereignty, which basically means what they want happens. For example, Donald Trump. Donald Trump can sign, or the president can sign, executive orders, and that's what happens. He has sovereignty. And protests used to be about trying to assert a sovereignty higher than our governments. Mm-hmm. So now I think that what's important is to look into our communities, into the world, and see, well, what are the different institutions that have sovereignty, and how do we take control of them as groups? One of the nice things I think about Christianity and being a Christian, believing in God, is that it actually opens up a new path. Because I think for secular activists, our only real ways are to assert that the highest form of power is some sort of human. But if you're a believer in God, well, there is a sovereignty higher than our government, and it's God. And I think that, so there's something there with Christianity. I can imagine a kind of Christian social movement that realizes that it needs to capture political power, but that its ultimate sovereign is God.
Well, Micah, thank you for being with us, for sharing some of your wisdom and insight. Let's thank Micah White for joining us today. Thanks, man.
As you listen to Gabe dialogue with Micah White, hopefully you are challenged to think of those in your community who, yes, are different from you, but you see a kindred goal in bringing flourishing to your city. This is part of the Up to Us movement. This is Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons. I'm Paul Perreault, and I know this is a rather fast-paced edition of our show, but we'd like to quickly move to a portion of another address from this past spring's Q conference. In talking about the new Up to Us campaign, we'd like to feature another conversation conducted by Luke Dooley from Q with Ebony Small and Duncan McFadzian. Now, both Ebony and Duncan felt the call that if there was going to be change in their communities, they had to speak up, meet up, and listen up. And through that, some great actions are happening. Let's listen.
Well, I'm honored to sit here and mostly to sit beside these two people who are incredible leaders and who have become good friends over the last couple of years. Immediately to my right is Duncan McFadzian, who hails from Edinburgh, Scotland. And then over here is Ebony Small from New York City. And I'll tell you more about them kind of as we go. But Ebony, I want to start with you. You're the director of something called Movement Day. And so you're leading this organization, and it's equipping thousands of leaders to renew their cities. What are the challenges that you guys are trying to solve for at Movement Day, and what are the opportunities that you guys see as you begin to assess those challenges and think about equipping all of these leaders, like these leaders that we see in front of us?
Well, thanks so much, Luke. A part of the mission for Movement Day is to catalyze Christian leaders to impact their city through the gospel. And in order for us to do that, the lens with which we view our city has to change. And we have to realize that our city is our inheritance from God. And when you think of your city as your inheritance, you'll begin to seek God for a vision for your city, but you will also seek a sense of calling to serve the people of your city, but also to serve the larger work of your community. And so we want to change paradigm, and that's the initial challenge that we see. But the great opportunity that we have is that when our paradigm changes as a leader, we can then influence others to seek the peace and prosperity of the city, and we become more present to our city through our leadership together.
Yeah, that's so good. Duncan, you're a guy, as I've got to know you over the last couple of years, man, you're deeply informed about the issues going on in your communities. Every time I talk to Duncan, be it a Google Hangout from across the pond or over a phone call or a Voxer thread that we have going, he's telling me about something that's happening in his church community or in his local city in Edinburgh or throughout the United Kingdom or broader in Europe or just on the global context at large. And he's very informed. But then I also know that you're deeply intentional about how your faith plays out in all those different arenas, and how your faith lived out in a real way, a real authentic way, can have impact in those different communities. And where does that come from, and what can you teach the rest of us about that kind of curiosity and that kind of faithfulness?
Yeah, well, I think God's led me on a journey and used Q to do that. This is not a set-up answer, by the way. But, you know, when I walked through the doors in Atlanta in 2007, I had no understanding of the concept of we're called to engage culture. And so that journey over the last decade has been a revelation to me. So as an investment banker, I was taught work's important, you know, so you should work, you should go out there and work hard, you shouldn't steal the pens, you should honor your boss. But no one ever told me that actually what I did was important, that I could use investment banking to work for the common good. And so that bigger sense of actually, as Ebony was saying, that call into the city was a real revelation and a wake-up call. Part of actually being how do you stay informed about your city is, do you actually care for your city? Do you know what's going on? Do you have eyes to see and ears to hear what's going on? Are you praying for your city? Do you walk your city? This might seem strange to Americans who don't really seem to walk anywhere, but if you walk your city, you will go at a slower pace and you will notice things that you would not normally see. And I think pulling those things together will just help you. The other thing I found is put yourself in conversations with people who do not agree with you, and that is a revelation. I did this during the Scottish independence referendum. I found people that were massively one side and massively the other side, and I was like, okay, I understand you a little bit better now.
So, Ebony, then as you think about a room full of leaders like this, and you're hearing Duncan kind of talking about how to think well about your city, and I know you believe deeply about developing a vision for your city, why is it important that each person in the room takes these ideas of engaging their city really seriously?
Again, it goes back to that point of promise and inheritance. I think that when we are deeply committed to the progress of our city, we can pray that prayer that Caleb prayed in Joshua 14 of, Lord, give me this mountain. And a part of this mountain for us is addressing the urban issues of our city. The news cycle is not their problem. The news cycle becomes the church's opportunity to be present with the city in suffering so that we can reign with the city in the victory that God gives to us. And so we need to be asking of ourselves, our ministries, our organizations, if all of the gifts that we have this term of the gifts are in the house, well, how are the gifts that we have as believers impacting the trend of sex trafficking? How is it impacting the reality of homelessness? What are we doing to make a difference? If people don't feel judged and condemned by our witness, then they'll be able to hear our message more effectively. And so as we think again about the great depth and the call that God has given us to serve our city, then we can approach that vision with a holistic mindset and really serve in a place of transformation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's amazing. Duncan, you speaking of serving a city, you do it in a really interesting way, because you're an investment banker by day. You're an interesting guy. You got your hands on a lot of different things. You're hosting a lot of different conversations. I've learned about you. That's what you like to do, is bring people together and host conversations. And you're kind of always having dinner with a leader that's coming through Scotland, or you're bringing people around to hear about a topic or an issue. Man, as you're doing that, as you're leading these different conversations, you've found yourself in some rooms and some situations and got some invitations that are probably unexpected. What has that been like, and how has that posture of asking good questions, of bringing people together, of being willing to learn from people on other sides of issues, and convening them at events like you host Q Commons in Edinburgh, at events like that, how has that created a platform for you specifically to more effectively engage the needs in your city?
Yeah, so I don't do conferences, I don't do events, I don't do public speaking, but Q Commons for me was a conversation that was important enough that I wanted to host it in my city. So we pulled together around about 150 people once a year into a room who are Christians, who are passionate about their faith and who want to make a difference, who want to advance good in their city. So we've been having those conversations, whether it's ISIS and how do they treat children, or loneliness, or Brexit, or anything, you know, loads of other topics that we've been talking about. And out of those, we've had a couple of really interesting conversations. So we have a UK Parliament, we have a Scottish Parliament. One of the members of the Scottish Parliament Parliament approached me and said, I want to hear about your vision. Why are you doing this? And so when we sat down and had this fascinating conversation in the Scottish Parliament, we were talking about how do we seek the flourishing of our city? How do we see this place become a city that pursues the common good, the most good for all people? And he said, that sounds fantastic. I want to host a dinner for you in the Scottish Parliament. Let's have 3 Christians, 9 non-Christians, and let's have a conversation about how we can do this together as people of faith and people of not faith. The other one was our city set out to have a vision for 2050, Edinburgh 2050. We found out about this. We invited the person who was leading it along to speak at Kew Commons. He came and he was absolutely fascinated that 150 people in Edinburgh were passionate about the welfare of the city. And they've invited us into a conversation to say, look, how can you help us build this city over the next 33 years? That's really encouraging. That's not actually anything really to do with me, but it's a testament to the fact that there are people in our city who really care. All we're really doing is giving them a platform to enable that to happen.
Yeah. Well, I'm deeply appreciative of both of you for the fact that you're essentially disciplers of people of these ideas. You build into leaders and you disciple them on these ideas of what it means to engage cities well. You give them tools and you give them resources and you equip them to go out and to lead these things. And I'm so grateful for both of you, and we all are. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay.
We hope this week's Q Ideas has both encouraged and inspired you for action. If you'd like to engage with us more on the theme of Up to Us, go to uptousnow.com. Also, as you listen to these messages, let me remind you that Q every year has its annual Q Conference. Now, next year, it's April 11th through the 13th in Nashville. If you'd like to learn more, go to qideas.org. On behalf of Gabe Lyons and the rest of the Q team, thanks for listening. We hope you have a great week.
This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.